In the city of Boston, the people will speak eventually, or at least 12 jurors will get to rule in open court and deliver a verdict in the Boston bombing criminal trial. Jury selection is this week. After that, those jurors will be free to speak to reporters or to avoid them. Such is not the case in the explosive grand jury proceedings that set off riots and protests in New York and Ferguson, when secret grand juries declined to indict officers for their use of deadly force against unarmed suspects. But an unnamed member of the grand jury in the case of Darren Wilson, shooter of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, that juror wants to speak. The juror has filed a lawsuit against St. Louis County Prosecutor Bob McCullough, and the American Civil Liberties Union of Missouri has joined that case. They allege the Darren Wilson case is unique and that typical grand jury rules should not apply. Joining us is Peter Joy, law professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you.
And what are the circumstances under which grand jurors ever speak, ever have their testimony released out of the secret proceedings of the grand jury?
That would only be in a situation where somebody testified before the grand jury and the prosecutor believed that they lied, so they prosecuted the person then for perjury, and either the defendant in that case or the prosecutor wanted to use a grand jury member to be a witness in a case. So it's a very limited situation where you would hear from a grand juror.
So the best that could happen in this American Civil Liberties Union lawsuit in the Ferguson case would be that certain grand jurors would be allowed to speak publicly about their impressions of the proceedings, or would there be a transcript that would be released as well? And I'm wondering what the argument would be. Do they have to prove some, the grand jury was railroaded kind of issue, some test issue?
Yeah, so I guess there are a couple questions there. And the last one is this particular grand juror who is the named plaintiff in the lawsuit is saying that the prosecutor had mischaracterized what the grand jury did when he made his statement at the press conference. It was called right after they decided not to bring back an indictment. And so this grand juror is saying, I want to have my say. I want to talk about my impressions. And also I want to talk to my family members, because the grand jurors are even prohibited by law from discussing what happened with their family members. So that's what this particular grand juror is saying, I'd like to do. And in terms of the transcript, in this particular case, the prosecutor has already released transcripts of the witnesses' testimony. Now, there have been some redactions. So, for example, the names of the witnesses have all been redacted except for Officer Wilson, who killed Michael Brown, and also for Michael Brown's companion on that day. But all the other witnesses' names were redacted, and there were also some other redactions. So the transcript's already out there.
It's hard to imagine what test there would be, in that the supposition is that a prosecutor has a lot of discretion with a grand jury and can encourage a grand jury to go in whatever direction the prosecutor wants with some limitations. Well, there's no way to really say that a grand jury is railroaded, since on some level that's kind of what we expect. True?
Well, yeah, that's right. And the other thing that some people don't know is, even if this grand jury had returned an indictment, the prosecutor has the authority to decide not to go forward with the case or to dismiss the case, in the middle of a trial. So the fact that a grand jury returns an indictment does not mean that the prosecutor has to prosecute somebody. So there's a whole lot of discretion that the prosecutor has.
And do the unique circumstances of the aftermath of the Ferguson shooting and the failure to indict render any of the legal restrictions on releasing testimony in a different light? I mean, are those circumstances important to the court?
Well, I think the most important thing to the court is the fact that so much of the transcript has already been released, and also that the prosecutor has characterized the grand jury's decision in a way that this particular grand juror says is not correct. So I think that those are the most compelling facts in favor of letting this grand juror speak. But there are also, I think, good arguments against letting this grand juror speak.
All right, if you could step out of your professorial objectivity for a moment. What do you think? Just a gut check. Does this stink?
No. I mean, well, when you say does this stink, I don't think this lawsuit stinks. I think that this particular grand juror, you know, has a point. Is it going to be compelling enough to convince a judge to let the grand juror speak? That I'm doubtful of. I think that there's also the interests of the other grand jurors. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the possibility of one or more of the other grand jurors intervening in this case to say, no, we don't want anybody to talk about our deliberations.
Do we even know the vote? It's a majority vote, right?
In terms of the vote, there needed to be 9 votes to bring back an indictment. So that means that if only 4 people were against bringing back an indictment, there would be no indictment, no Truebill. And so that's one of the other things that is, I think, lurking in this lawsuit is the fact that we might find out that the grand jury, actually a majority of them, may have wanted to bring back an indictment, but a majority isn't enough.
Peter Joy, law professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Thanks so much.
Okay, and thank you very much.